Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows, only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. I actually have my good friend from the Unfiltered Studios family. I have Jay Brooke with me. We cannot wait to dive into Good Will Hunting. So everybody, welcome Jay to the show. Without further ado, let's go on ahead. Let's start with some Good Will Hunting, and I'm pumped. So let the healing begin. So let's do this. And welcome to our therapy session. Jay, how are you?
Oh, I'm feeling like I'm going to need some therapy. I watched it a few times this week. And
same here.
Kind of close to home, right?
Exactly. So, Jay, my question is for you, is this. Tell everybody about your podcast, what your podcast is about, and stuff like that, and we'll get into everything else.
Sure. All right. So thank you for having me on again. Before I start. So the name of my podcast is called The With Jay Burke Show. And I'll give you a little background. I'm going to make it real quick. I used to be on someone else's podcast, and it used to be called The Luca Petta Show. But when I was on, he would call it With Jay Burke. There was a joke made during the podcast episode, or one of them. And he said, what would happen if I was like dead? And I was like, well, the show's got to go on. So it'd be The With Jay Burke Show. And it was a joke. But years later, that just kind of, you know, metastasized into something. And now it's a show where anybody I talk to or have a conversation with, it's really their show. I'm just kind of the co-host with them. That's where I'm kind of comfortable anyway. But yeah, so the show is just really about good conversations and trying to get to the bottom of anything interesting. You know, I have shows about, I've had people on who've had like porn addiction. I've had shows about George Carlin. I've been all over the place with it. Some of the future ones coming up, I have one on ethical non-monogamy, but then I also have stuff about like marijuana prohibition coming up. So it's really just a show that encapsulates a lot of different things and just takes a deep dive into it. I always call it a journey. So
I like that.
That's the With Jay Burke Show. Yeah. So I always say, take the journey.
You know, I always like, here's the thing I like about your show. It's so laid back and so lax that you actually do feel like you're on this journey with you and your guests. And I just want to say you're doing a good job on your show. I just want to point that out.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. So yeah, conversation, man.
Well, lay down on the couch and we'll do our therapy session for Good Will.
Right.
So my question is this. How do you feel about this movie nostalgically? And where did you first see this movie?
So this movie came out in 1997, which is an incredible movie year, at least, you know, critically speaking. Same year that maybe, I think, obviously Titanic is the film everybody remembers from 97. But Donnie Brasco, L.A. Confidential, mm-hmm. Boogie Nights, there's a whole slew of them that year. One of the best movie years ever. But when it came out, you know, I remember going to see that with my girlfriend at the time. And I was more surprised at how much I liked it. There was definitely like an emotional weight to it. But I don't remember getting as swept up in it back then, until I did
rewatches.
It's a deep
movie.
It is, but it was on rewatches that I really, really said, you know, this is a lot better than I thought it was. You know, even back then, I took my parents to see it because I was like, oh, they'd love this movie. And I remember going to see it with them. But, you know, I'll say this, you know, back then, I think, you might be around the same age as I am.
I'm 39. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm a few years older. I'm 44. but I think you've you feel more in touch with Matt Damon's character at that time, because it's just you know, like when Sean, the therapist, who's played by Robin Williams, you know, he's always calling him like, "You don't know anything, you little shit," and you're like, "Yeah, I do." You know what I mean? Like, exactly. I got the whole, you know, the whole world right there. It's the same thing. Am I allowed to curse here?
Yeah.
Okay. Make sure we're live. I'm already dropping the S-bomb.
Yeah, okay. Man, you're good.
Okay. So yeah, I loved it back then, but I didn't. But I do think this one might have a little more staying power emotionally than some of the other movies back then.
I do agree with you on that. Like, I remember them. I remember the Academy Awards at that time. I was a kid, but I was young. But at that time, I didn't really gravitate towards it. I remember seeing it at Blockbuster. I remember seeing it on the shelf, and then I would bypass it and go to something else. And then as I got older, I'm like, you know, there's a reason why this movie won the Academy Award. This is why Matt Damon and also Ben Affleck are who they are today. This paved the way for them as well. Not saying that Mallrats didn't pave the way for Ben Affleck or Phantoms. But this movie is what put them on the map because of the fact this is a screenplay that was written by them.
Right. The story behind it's incredible. I think that's part of the draw of it back then was, mm-hmm. I mean, people don't know that now because Heinz, they know Matt Damon and Ben Affleck as these huge movie stars, but it was such an incredible story back then. Like, two guys just took it upon themselves to write this amazing screenplay. And there's a long story behind getting to there, which is interesting too. But yeah, this is what made them. That's what put them on the map. Really, they were the It Boys, you know.
Exactly, two boys from Boston, just going on, just basically writing a script and seeing what happens, and knock it out of the park within one screenplay.
Yeah, you know, it made you. I remember at the time being like, I could do this. Like, made right? you believe like you could do it. Yeah, it made you believe, like, oh, if I just, you know,
right, shit, I can go on ahead and do this too. Let me go on and get start running. And then all of a sudden you're looking at a blank paper like, I cannot do this.
Right? I can't do the same thing.
But did, if you were going ahead,
I'm sorry, I mean, did you investigate the whole story behind that, about how that started? And
I don't have that trivia in front of me. I do have other facts, though, other than that.
Okay. Yeah, that was, I mean, that's an interesting story, too, because Matt Damon wrote that in his last year of college. Well, he started it then. He started it for a drama class, and his teacher told him that he thought he had something there. But that was a different movie that he wrote. He wrote all the genius stuff and a lot of that in there, but it was also like an espionage movie, like these... The FBI wanted, or NASA, or somebody wanted to use his brain because he was so smart. And one of the scenes that did stay in there, that NASA scene where he goes for the job interview and he's like, well, you make a lot of good points, but I can think of a few reasons not to work for NASA. That was originally in there.
Okay.
But yeah, he ended up dropping it later because Miramax had originally purchased the film. And Rob Reiner read it, and he says that the heart of the story is the people in it, is the kid, and the fact that he's like a genius and he struggles so much. He's like, you got to get rid of the other stuff. And that's kind of, you know, part of how they do it. There's a whole other story, and then, you know, but that's the main crux of that. Like, it's just, it was such a different movie.
Okay. My question is this, like, if you were to rate this as like a young Jay, how would you rate this film?
Like a scale of 10? Yeah. 1 to 10? God, I'd probably give it back then like a 7.
7? Okay.
I think a solid 7.
Okay. For me, I'm going to have to go with, even though I'm from Boston, and it holds the, I'm actually from East Boston.
Okay.
So, you know, I have to actually say I give this at least a 6.5 because of the fact of how old I was at that time.
Okay.
Nostalgically. But right. I will give my adult opinion later on after we get done dissecting it.
Yeah.
And everything, right. Because I love this film. Hands down, Williams is best in this movie. Everybody's on par. There's no forced acting, no forced dialogue.
No.
This is just perfect. I mean, there's no such thing as a perfect movie, but in my eyes, this is me remembering it nostalgically. I think that this is actually a great film.
Yeah. When I go back, so watching it even today, I was watching it with my wife, and I kind of said that. I was like, God, there's nothing fake in this movie. Like, everybody is so real. It's just like they followed some people.
Even the normal conversations that they have in this film, especially when Matt meets the girlfriend, and then you have this one douchebag that looks like Thor inside in the bar. And he's it's like, hey, you like apples? Yeah. How about them?
Amazing. I know. So, I said that too.
But seriously, and that's actually how Boston people actually talk. They smack talk each other, and that's how it goes. But let's go on ahead. Let's dive into this. So welcome back to Movie Loves Unite, the podcast where we analyze movies like they're our own therapy sessions. I'm your host, John, and today I actually have Jay with me. We're tackling Good Will Hunting, the film that proves even genius needs a little push. Don't worry, we'll keep the mat to a minimum and the laughter to the maximum, just like Good Will Hunting balances heart and humor. We'll dive into the deep moments while sprinkling in some old-fashioned jokes. So grab your notebooks and your best Boston accent. We're going to go on a wicked smart ride through Good Will Hunting. So let's go on ahead. So 20-year-old Will Hunting, Matt Damon of South Boston, is a self-taught genius level intellect with eidetic memory. Though he works simply as a janitor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and spends his free time drinking with his friends, Chucky, who's played by Ben Affleck, Billy, who's played by Cole Hauser, and Morgan, played by Casey Affleck. When Professor Gerald Lambeau, who's played by Stellan Skarsgård, poses a difficult problem taken from an algebraic graph theory as a challenge for his graduate students, will solve the problem anonymously. Stunning both the graduate students and Lambeau himself, as a challenge to the unknown genius, Lambeau posts an even more difficult problem and chances upon Will solving it. So I like the opening of this. Right off the bat, we're already introduced to the characters, we're introduced to Will, and you actually get a sense of how this mathematics teacher is, you know?
Yeah.
He's this douchebag who thinks he has it all. And you find out later on he has a medal, and that's something also too that Sean keeps on pointing out too. But you can definitely tell that he thinks he's actually smarter than everybody else in that classroom and challenging them to solve a mathematical equation. And then even his own TA is over there trying to basically try to outsmart the teacher too.
Yep.
So what do you think about him challenging the students and things like that? Because I thought challenging the students is actually good for them to be challenged. But to be and I know that you're in a Boston Technical College and stuff like that, but at the same time, you're also being kind of an asshole because of the fact that, you know, you already know that these students don't have the same capabilities as you do, but you want them to, and you want to push them. But at the same time, you're also kind of being an asshole to them too, by setting that standard and trying to point somebody out who's actually smarter than somebody else. What do you think?
Well, the one thing that is great about this movie, especially on rewatch, is there's a lot of depth to every character. Mm-hmm. Even if they don't have much screen time, there's depth to them. There's something about them. I think he's kind of an asshole too. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's the worst person in the world. Obviously,
no.
He's a brilliant guy. His flaw is that I think he likes to be smarter than everybody, right? I mean, that's one of his things. I mean, if you're going to take his class, you're probably one of those people who's looking to get pushed. That's where the dynamic there is so interesting, is that's not what Will's looking to do.
No.
Right? I mean, Will gets dropped in his lap. And, you know, the professor is all about, was he? Gerald Lambeau is the name of the professor.
Yeah.
Stellan Skarsgård plays.
Yep.
You know, he's the type of guy who's just, everything's about greatness, I think, or maximizing potential. And there's the rub. So, I mean, he's not an asshole in some way, depending on the setting. But he, you know, he's definitely has some personal issues, especially with Sean, played by Robin Williams. There's obviously some kind of history there. later on. I guess we'll get into that, but he plays up a lot of things, like, you know, you're jealous of me and stuff like that.
Exactly. So. Then also, too, we also see at a bar, Will is also, he gets into a fight with a group of college students who are amazingly by his ability to solve complex math problems, too. So you see that being played out. So you already know, have him feel for this character where he's cocky, he's arrogant, he thinks he knows everything, and he's also getting into fights. And he ends up beating the hell out of this supposed bully.
Yeah.
He goes, wait, I think that guy bullied me in high school. So they beat the shit out of him out on the basketball court, and then he gets arrested. But yeah, you actually have a sensibility of who Will Hunting is, and that's in that whole entire 5 minutes of what we're getting.
Yeah, it's not rushed, any of that either, right? It all happens fast, but it doesn't feel like, you know, sometimes I watch movies now and it's like the setup is just really quick to get to the action or whatever, and there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, depending on what you're watching, if it's like superhero films, obviously, and stuff like that, this is different. But there's never like a sense that this is unfolding quickly, but you're like, man, that's like the first 20 minutes of the movie when you're talking about it.
Exactly. And I like that slow build to it, because I think that if you rushed it, you wouldn't understand who Will is. You wouldn't understand what this professor's about. And also, too, all you would have like a one-dimensional characters where basically you have a douchebag professor. That's all you would have. No layers to him. Will's an asshole, too. So there's no one to really root for other than maybe the situations get better with time. But you're rooting for for Will's character because of the layers that Will has, because of the way Matt is actually playing him.
Yeah, I mean, and I think everybody can understand what it's like to be a kid and, you know, you're defiant by nature, right? Like your teenage years into your 20s, you want to defy any kind of anybody who's an authority figure or whatnot. His is just multiplied. And I can't imagine having that much, being that much smarter than everybody in his situation and how that would play out. I mean, just, I couldn't imagine if I had that kind of intellect, what I would be, you know?
Exactly. And you know, the fact that, too, he's a janitor at an MIT college, and this, like, scene, too, where we actually see his day-to-day life, and you see him solving these mathematical problems that Lembau has, and he quickly walks out so that way nobody else sees him, because he doesn't want anyone to know that he's smart or anything, and he's a janitor, and you wind up finding out, though, too, he's on PO, he's on parole. Too, which is why he's even there in the first place. So I like that little mystery element of the fact there's more to Will than just him being a janitor later on in the film when we discover, oh, he has a PO officer in place.
Yeah.
Even though you don't see the PO officer when in that whole entire setup. But I like that whole entire element.
It's also a good setup in a sense. It says something about the character, right? So he's smarter than everybody. He do whatever he wants. He kind of likes messing with people about it. He doesn't want to be known as the smart guy or anything.
Right.
He just liked screwing around and getting that problem right and making them all nuts.
Exactly. I'm wondering who the hell's doing this.
Yeah.
And Lombao's even shocked by it. And then, you know, he just likes having that thing of feeling like he got away with something.
So
I like that cockiness that Matt brings to this, though, too, because of that arrogance. But, you know, fearing he loses sole means of a merger income, Will flees and skips going into work the next day. That night, Will meets Skylar Mini Driver, a British orphan about to graduate from Harvard who plans on attending graduate school at the Stanford University of Medicine immediately after. So you have that being played out.
Yeah. Well, we throw the love interest in there, but it's such a perfect amalgamation of things that are happening at once that drive the story, right? So, I mean, he needs all these things to come together to be able to change at the end, to face whatever's in his past and then move forward. And, you know, that's just happens to be everything that comes together, right?
Right. Like, Sleepy, how you like those apples? How about I got a number. Yeah, my boss, every single time I see a Boston movie, my accent comes out. So I'm like, but you know, we're going to talk about that because I mentioned before, how many people do this? They hit on this one girl. They're thinking that they're so smart and everything. And then all of a sudden Will comes in there, breaks the guy's balls. And he winds up quoting everything from the book that the guy is saying. Goes, what are you going to quote now? What are you going to do next? You're going to plagiarize the whole entire book?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have any of your own opinions? Because it looks like you don't have jack shit.
Yep. He talks about the originality, right? At least I'll be original in 50 years. And I even like the way he just does that. He gets quiet and he's like, if you have a problem with that, we can just go step outside, you know? And he does that and that guy's just going to back down. And I don't blame him because it's scary to me. Like if that guy came up through that kind of intellect and just that kind of whatever and just did that to me, I would be the same way.
But I like the play that he does with the girl, though. I like the love interest so much. I like how Skylar, he's into Skylar, but he doesn't want to let Skylar know that he's into her. So what he does is he just waits until she leaves. And Skylar just looks at him. She goes, you know, I've been looking at you all night.
Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know if that was a play by him or if he just like did his thing and just that was it and he let it go. Because he does kind of look genuinely surprised to me by it.
Well, the way that I looked at it was this, okay? You know, I think he wanted her. I think he was trying to hit on her without trying to hit on her by trying to be the smartest one in the room by making the guy feel belittled.
Right.
And she was into Will right off the bat because of the fact of how she was smiling and how much he was just laying down everything. And then he walks off and drinks his beer. And, you know, Matt's just going to go on ahead because we already said Will just likes to play on people. So what I took it as was, okay, this is just his character basically just trying to hit on her without trying to hit on her and let her make the move. And so she goes, what are you doing? I was having some beers over here and you're sitting over here and I've been staring at you all night.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't. And then I like how he goes, I wasn't sure if you were into me or anything because, you know, you didn't say anything to me all night or anything. So why did I think that you were into me? Then all of a sudden she writes down her number and gives it to him. And then you wind up seeing that cocky, arrogant guy as they're walking out of the bar.
And one of the most famous lines.
Yep. But you know what, though? I thought he was going to have a confrontation because it's been so long since I've seen it. I thought he was going to whoop that dude's ass outside. Because I thought the guy was going to come out. I'm like, oh, no, this is not going to be good. But then he's like, hey, you like apples? He goes, yeah. He goes, I got a number. How about you like those apples? That's what I like.
Yeah. One of the best lines. One of the best lines, though. I mean, that's the one I still remember from the movie's 27 years old. I
think. Right.
Which is scary. But that was one of the scenes that stood out, you know. It's just, you know, it's such a cool way to go about it, though. I mean, he already destroyed the guy. So it was like, but the guy deserved it. I mean, it wasn't like that guy was a jerk. So.
I wouldn't say he was the most punchable face in the movie. I wouldn't say that, you know, but I would have to say that Will definitely winded up getting the girl in the end. So he wins that.
Yeah.
But then we have the other scene again with another math problem. Professor Gerald Lembau once again challenging math problem on a chalkboard at MIT, which Will anonymously solves overnight.
Yep.
And, you know, and then after that happens, you wind up having another scene that plays out where he's assaulting a man who bullied him as a child. We talked about that. Basically, he winds up getting sentenced and everything and booked for assaulting an officer. But Lembau arranges for him to forgo jail time if he agrees to study mathematics under Lembau's supervision while simultaneously seeking behavioral health treatment with a therapist. Will tentatively agrees, but treats his first few therapists with contempt. But I like how he's representing himself in the courtroom.
Yes.
And this is hilarious because even the judge brings up the fact that this is not his first rodeo, that he actually wins every single court case by quoting a few
basically obscure laws from like the 17 and 1800s, some kind of land. I forget what it was. It was something with like a land. I forget, but yeah, very obscure. And again, a great way to show character, right? I mean, that how smart he was, how his mind worked, how he treated authority, right? And part of the things he does is he thinks he can get away with it, probably, right? He's always gotten away with it.
Right. So why not now? But yeah. Except for one thing, this judge is here to play hardball and make an example of him. Mm-hmm. He's like, look, you have a rap sheet a mile long. You also represented yourself in this courtroom X amount of times. You have Lambeau looking is just impressed over the fact that he's quoting all these laws from the 17th century, supposedly. But the judge is also telling him, you had your chance, you blew it. You were bringing your ass in the back, and we're booking you.
Yeah.
And the one phone call he uses it to call Skyler.
Yeah. Yes. You don't happen to be pre-law, do you? He says to
her. And then he runs up running into this buddy at juvie.
Yep.
Too, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, that was a funny scene.
But then Lambeau walks in. He goes, look, I made a deal with the judge. Good news is I'm bailing you out for the $50K that was your bond. The bad news is you also have to do therapy too. He goes, fuck that. I'm not doing no therapy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's his big thing though. If you watch the whole movie, I think he's so scared of that, of trying to get in touch with that. I also imagine being where he comes from, he had to be like a tough kid, and that's mm-hmm. probably not the toughest thing to do. Although, you know, I got to tell you, I was researching, when I researched this, there was an article that came up that I guess some therapist said that movie actually helped, not right away, but later on, like helped with the stigma of males going to therapy. Like a lot, they saw an uptick after that, which is interesting. Yeah. So I think at the time, at least when I was a kid, you know, it wasn't like there was a, nowadays anybody can go, you know, nobody bats an eye.
No.
Back then it was a little different. You know, you didn't really talk about that if you were a man. So I could see that to him challenging his sense of manhood. And the other thing is he was scared. He didn't want to look in. I mean, he obviously knew some of the things going on because later in the movie, I'm sure we'll talk about it. He mentions when Sean's looking at his file, like I'm sure that says attachment disorder, antisocial behavior, blah, blah, blah. You know, he knows all that stuff. So he's anything he read, he remembers. So he knows what's going to be in there and what he has to face.
Right. And I also like how he uses everybody's books against him.
Ah.
Against his own therapist, but yes. But you mentioned something. I want to piggyback off of something real quick before we break down that scene. You mm-hmm. mentioned the fact that men were afraid to go to therapy and stuff like that, and this actually was a bridgeway to actually make men go to therapy. That's actually true, because 2 years later you have The Sopranos coming out. So therefore, there was nothing that was relatable for men to go to therapy to open up.
Yeah, I can't think of anything before those two shows growing up that ever had a male. I mean, females, obviously, but
right,
never had male, any kind of male figure in therapy.
And I like the fact that this is basically a self-help type of thing for men to go to is, hey, look, it's okay to be vulnerable in a situation and feeling okay to just talk to somebody. You don't have to hold in your emotions like we think that we have to. So I like that too. It's inspirational for writers, stuff like that, for the Ben Affleck thing, but it's also inspirational for people for their own mental health. So I thought that was actually a pretty neat thing.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring up.
Yeah, definitely.
But I like how he's using the books mm-hmm. against the therapist. Like this one guy, one therapist, he goes, me and the guys and everything, we were going to this one club. And we were just going down, and next thing you know, just all of a sudden, this loud music, and then he has like that club beatbox thing that he's doing, and then he goes, "Hey, it's okay if you're gay." I don't care if you're gay. He goes, hey, if you want to do that, that's perfectly fine. You know, if you want to just cut a rug or something, bump rugs. And the guy is like, I'm not gay. He goes, that's okay. You can talk to me about it. And the next thing you know, he throws. That's it. If you want to break down the hypno guy, the hypno therapist that he does.
Oh, yeah. And then they try the hypnotherapist. That's the next scene. God, he starts with, talking about being a kid, and you know, it sounds like he's going to get into something that, you know, something that terrible that happened to him, I think, whether he was molested as a child or something like that. And then he just breaks into song in the middle of it.
Right, with Afternoon Delight.
That was it. It was an Afternoon Delight. I couldn't think of the song.
I only know that because of Anchorman, so that's why it stood with.
Yeah. Yeah, and then that's a whole. They go through the whole succession of that, and you find out he went through about five of them that nobody could get to him.
But you know, they showed at least two of them. So
yeah, but you know, those therapists made sense in Lambeau's world, right? Mm-hmm. They were high class types who would deal with a very specialized type of individual. So there was no way, you know, looking at him, there was no way he was going to relate to somebody like that. He can't even open to himself. He's going to open up to that guy. You know,
you need somebody that speaks like him and understands mm-hmm. him like him. He's 20 years old. He's not going to relate to someone that wrote their own damn book, even though John wrote his own book. But you need someone that can actually talk to him like a regular person. Not someone that has a PhD in psychology, in a sense, where they're just stuck-up snobs.
Yeah. Well, I think Lambeau's... See, he's not looking... Well, he's not going to understand him just because...
No. He's outside of his element.
Right. He is, but he understands the intellect. So he keeps bringing... Like, Will could match those guys intellectually, obviously, because he matches up against these amazing mathematicians and... whatever you see throughout the film, but he was never going to be able to open up to somebody like that. All he could do is exactly what he did, which was mess with him.
Right.
Which he enjoyed doing.
Right. I was like, hey, do you want to try the hypno thing again? I had fun the first time. because that's it. I quit. That's it. Then next thing you know, we actually have Lambeau, who ends up going over to the Boston College, which is only like a community college that Sean is actually teaching in. This is where we get our first introduction to Robin Williams. And he's teaching a class and walks Lambeau and he goes, look, wow, class, we have a high honor guest with us today. He goes, welcome, Professor Lambeau. To my classroom. He won the medal for great mathematics. And because if you don't know what that is, it's a gold medal for math. But then I like how he was talking about what was the therapist from the history that he was actually going to talk about? He goes, we're going to talk about him doing too much cocaine.
Maybe?
Yeah, Freud doing too much.
Yeah, more cocaine than a horse, something like that. Enough cocaine to kill a horse.
More cocaine than a horse, But I would like to have Robin Williams as my professor. That's sign me up for that.
You know, I said that when I was watching it. Like, just watching him talk, I'd be like, this guy is awesome.
Right? I'll be taking notes all the time.
Yeah, I would definitely be interested.
My wife. Hey, baby. But yeah, my wife was watching this with me too, because this is her first time in a long time that she's seen it as well.
Did she think of it differently?
She liked it. She thought it was a pretty good film. She really enjoyed it. But do you want to break down the scene with Lambeau and Sean a little bit?
Oh, so the first time they meet?
Yeah. Whenever he's trying to get him to go with Will to do therapy with Will.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think the first thing you recognize is like, what's up with these two? There's such a huge difference between Robin Williams and him. But Robin Williams was obviously smart and, mm-hmm. and knew him and had the medal or whatever the hell it was. But that's where you find out that he has something that Will would watched it for the first time in forever. Okay. But you find out that maybe Will will have a match, right? Because obviously Robin Williams has intellect, but he comes from the same place. And that's what Lambeau says to him. He goes, you'll reach him. But Lambeau is also reiterates the fact that like his mind, you know, he's just so obsessed with Will's mind and the way it works. And probably one of the reasons would be is Lambeau's probably the smartest guy, you know, was always the smartest guy in the room about 99% of the time. And then to have just this kid with all this brilliance and what they can do together. But that's, you know, again, that's another scene that's quick and you don't think much is going on.
Point.
But it sets up so much.
I look at this movie as like chess pieces. Like yeah. There's certain moves within the chess game itself that you have to do. And to set up Robin Williams as the, you know, as a psychiatrist for Will, I think it sets up great. You need to have him in there.
Yeah.
And yeah.
You know who they wanted to play Robin Williams' part in the beginning? They were trying to get Harrison Ford.
No.
And Harrison Ford turned it down. And they asked Harrison Ford about it years later. And he's like, no, I don't regret it because like Robin Williams was awesome. Why would I regret that?
Exactly.
They loved. So that was like their boyhood idol. So they were trying to get him on to do it. And that was one of the other things they needed when Miramax, I think, ended up buying out the script because first it was with another company, which was, and I said in the beginning, but now I totally forget who it was. Was it Lionsgate? I don't think they exist anymore.
No. Lionsgate still exists. It's just,
or is bought out by somebody.
I don't know. I know Lionsgate still does because they're the ones who produced the Saw movies aside from, Twisted Pictures is actually part of James Wan's company, but they also do Lionsgate too.
Okay. I can't remember. Okay. So, well, anyway. Oh, no, it was Miramax.
Miramax. Yeah. The Crying Game and all that stuff.
Yeah, they bought it. Well, it's Weinstein's old group. Yeah, that's Pulp Fiction. That's a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of different stuff. So, anyway, Miramax ended up buying it out. But they needed to have, they really needed a star, like a lead. And luckily, Robin Williams, when they offered it to him, took it. He loved it.
Right. And you know, I like how basically LaMounce actually used to be Sean's roommate in college. Mm-hmm. And they're totally opposite of each other if you think about it, the way they are. He's more laid back, of a laid back kind of professor, straight to the point. Lambeau is a mathematics teacher who was also high strung on his own opinions and stuff like that. And also too, kind of on the conservative kind of side too, to the point where, you know, he doesn't let anybody else have any other opinions. Well, Sean lets people have their own opinions and discussions on certain things.
I think Lambeau just has a focus on, I don't want to even say, I mean, obviously being the best you can be, but I think he looks at that intellect as something that could be used in the world. And Robin Williams, you know, who knows what he was before his wife passed away, but you know, he's on the emotional side of it, right? Like life and stuff. And they're just kind of like a contrast in how, how paths can diverge, you know, just by chance or fate or whatever you want to call it. Just things happen that are out of your control.
Right. And now you have Sean who meets Will for the first time. I like how he tells Lambeau to leave the room. Him and he goes, you too, talking about the TA. And he goes, well, just letting you know that Will probably also read your book too. So just letting you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, at first, you know, Will is just sitting there And Sean's looking at him, and then he goes, "So, you read any of these books? Anything on the bottom? Nope. What about the top?" He goes, "Yeah, I read all those."
Yeah.
He goes, "Ah, interesting picture over there." And he looks over at Van Gogh, and you know what, though? I'm going to go a little bit deep on this. I believe that is basically like Will is this big tidal wave, and here's basically Sean in the boat, and this is storm that is Will.
That's an astute observation, actually. I never really thought of it that way.
Like, I'm going a little deep, but that's what I got from the picture itself. It's like this calmness, and then there's a storm that's coming over him.
Yeah, I like that, though, because it's like he's like just adrift out at sea. Like, I would think of it as Sean is adrift, like rudderless. He doesn't have a direction anymore. And then the storm that's coming is Will. And obviously the storm ended up being a good thing because it changed his direction. But yeah, I like that observation. Thanks. I didn't think of that.
Thank you. It was just me doing some deep thinking while I was watching it. And yeah. I'm like, am I going too deep here? But then I'm like, I'm watching a psychology film. So
I was going to say, though, a lot of times, and it's advanced science involved with that. So I could see it being a little deeper than meets the eye.
Definitely. Right. But okay. So then you have this whole entire thing that plays out. He goes, "Well, you're one step away from being Van Gogh." He goes, "Well, should I go on ahead, cut off my ear, send it over to a prostitute?" He goes, "Yeah, no, you probably did paint by numbers." He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, fun fact, it was paint by numbers. It was a pain in the ass to actually paint, by the way." And then he goes, and then he starts talking about his wife. He goes, "Yeah, your wife probably left you." And then he hits a sore spot because then you find out that his wife did die of cancer.
Yeah, but then you don't know it. Like, you know, you're watching it the first time, you think that's probably it just because of the way he flips the switch. But, you know, Will found the spot, right? Like, it was easy for him to mess with the other guys. They were stuffy. They were serious. The intellect was all they knew. With Sean, it's a little different because he doesn't care about all. Like, he sees through all that shit.
Exactly.
And once he finds it, he tries to hit it. But he didn't expect, you know, Robin Williams' reaction in that moment.
No, he didn't. He didn't expect that reaction because he's always used to being the person that's always making the therapist get thrown out.
Yeah.
Basically throwing him out or them quitting. So he thought he would get the same reaction out of Sean, but he doesn't get that reaction out of Sean. And it kind of takes him back. He's like, wait, I can't fuck with this guy.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so I really got to go on ahead and do this shit now.
Yeah, I wonder if that's more like where they came from, right? On the streets, like a respect thing. Mm-hmm. Because of what happens later where they talk about two guys staring at each other on the street or something in the office.
Like, so after a while, he has a couple of therapy sessions and stuff that Will begins to open up. Will is particularly struck by Sean's story of how he met his wife by giving up his ticket to the historic sixth game of the 1975 World Series after falling in love at first sight. Sean neither regrets his decision nor does he regret the final years of his marriage when his wife was dying of cancer. This encourages Will to build a relationship with Skylar. Though he lies to her about his past and is reluctant to introduce her to his friends and or show her his rundown neighborhood, Will also challenges Sean to take an objective to look at his own life since Sean has been unable to move on from his wife's death.
Yeah. I mean, that starts. So that's like a little bit of time. There's a few scenes that actually happen with that because. Right. We'll start there. When he finally opens up, which is a good scene too, because it's like you see Sean there and he's just like, it's probably like the second or third time they're meeting and they still haven't talked. It's like a, they called it a stare down from the old hood or whatever. And you see him start to nod off and then Will starts talking. But Will's funny in that scene because he's like, "I have been laid before." You know, it's like, good for you, kid.
Right.
But that's actually just a throwback to the scene I love where he took him to the park on that.
Yeah, second meeting. That's what I wanted to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he said, he's like, you've probably been, you think you know everything and blah, blah, blah. This. And he's like, you've probably even been late a few times before.
You probably could give me a sub list of everyone that you slept with.
Yes. Yeah. Which is actually like, it might be my favorite scene in the movie, that park scene, just because of the way he, you could tell he, and by the way, that's like when I watch the acting in that, I'm like, yeah, Matt Damon lives this part. You know, it just, you could see in his eyes and the way he, like, there's nothing said, but like, it's all there. Like, he's never been talked to that way or addressed that way. And
no,
or read. He's usually doing the reading on other people.
Exactly.
He's talking about, you think I know anything about your life because they read Oliver Twist, you know?
Right. Yeah. Give me some more, good sir. But yeah. But I like that whole entire monologue. That whole entire monologue makes Will just be like, he broke down his walls.
Yeah.
And realize that he's not as big as he thinks he is. He's actually small in scale now.
Yeah.
Where basically now he can open up to his therapist versus closing him off. Because his therapist finally figured him out. And he doesn't know what to do now but to open up to him.
Yeah. And you're right.
He
does end up. So when he says that thing, I've been laid before, obviously he went on the date with Skylar and he slept with her or whatever. And then he didn't call her.
Right.
But then they have that whole conversation. And you're right. Like, I think he takes the opportunity, right? He's like, right now, this girl is perfect.
And exactly.
Like, why don't you go back on a date with her? Sport? Why don't you, you know?
Well, my favorite, the thing that I like about this, okay, with the 1975 thing goes, come on, man, it's 1975. And you, what do you do? And he goes, yeah, man, I remember the time that I got my ticket and we went to the scalper. And then my friends and I sat at this bar. And then what we do is we went on ahead, had a couple of drinks, and then walks this girl.
Yeah.
And then I'm watching the TV and we're just as excited about the story as Will is and engaged into the story. And then he goes, and what happened? He goes, I didn't go to the game. Goes, what? Yeah.
He goes, what the fuck? Yeah. He goes, did you rush the field? No, I wasn't there.
And he's right.
Like, what? That is such a great scene, and the way they play it out and how excited it is. And you're in the moment, right? Like, you're there. You're like, oh my God.
And you see the 1975 play of everything that Williams is telling him, as Sean is telling him. And I like how that scene plays out. And then you wind up having this other thing. He goes, so your friends just let you get away with that?
Yeah.
He goes, yeah.
Who are your friends?
Who's your friends? My friends wouldn't even let me get away with that. He goes, what did you say to him? I got to see about a girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then that's the light switch that goes on, like you were mentioning, Jay, where he's like, you know what? I have a good thing with Skylar. I want to see where this goes. Who knows? I could actually just be like Sean, where basically I could actually have something here.
Yeah.
So I like how there's layers to Will that are, now we're seeing a transformation of his character at this point.
Yeah. I don't, as you watch that, you realize he's never had a father figure, and obviously he respects Sean. So that's going to be like the closest thing he has to one. And I think he respected that about him, like that opinion. But I love the end of that too, when he's like, would have been nice to go to the game though. He's like, I didn't know he was going to hit a home run. You know, whatever. And that's how it ends.
Right. Like, well, and then you have him and Skylar getting ready to get it on again, making love. And then just, when do I get to meet your, and then also too, this other thing that plays out before that though, too, goes, so how many brothers do you have? I have 11 brothers. He goes, and then he names off all the brothers. And then she goes, you're lying to me. No, I'm serious. I have 11 brothers.
Yeah.
And she goes, and then laying in bed, she goes, so when do I meet your friends? She goes, well, you're not going to get any until you introduce me to your friends. So he goes on ahead and and calls one of his friends. He goes, so do I get like a down payment now?
Yeah. Go to bed, Chucky. Yeah, that part was so funny. That's another great scene. Also, the thing with him naming the brothers, I remember in the movies being like,
Bobby,
does he have a brother? Like, just to name them again. I mean, I know it was a photographic memory or whatever, but you know, I was like, I remember he did it so good. I'm like, well, I mean, just because an orphan doesn't mean he didn't know any brothers, but yeah, obviously that plays out later on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But I know if it was me, I wouldn't be able to recite that line that fast like he does. That's a hard line to actually recite over and over again and not lie and you know you're bullshitting. And I really like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I love that scene. Like I said, I was kind of fooled by it. And I was like, is he messing or is he like, how does he do that like that? Unless he does have those 11 brothers, Mickey, Bobby, Joey, you know, he goes into this like whole thing.
Man. And then after that, I like the chemistry between Chucky and him too.
Mm-hmm.
As well. He's like, man, you have so much going on for yourself. He goes, one day I want to go on ahead and I want to come to your door and you're not going to be here.
Yeah.
Because I like how caring his friend is.
Yeah. I mean, but that was a lot of friendships, at least growing up for me, are kind of more like that, right? Like your friends would die for you. They take a bullet for you. They do anything for you, but they weren't really, you know, they weren't going to hug you and be like, I love you, bro. You know, like that.
No, absolutely not.
But that's his way of caring, you know, and that's where he shows, like, you know. I'm gonna wake up and be 50 years old and still be doing that. That's fine, but
right. I'm still gonna be a construction worker.
That's my life. He's like, and that's fine. Like I accept that. I know that's what it is, but for you, I can't watch you that way. He says, I'll beat the shit out of you if you're doing this.
So after that happens, shafting under Lombau's high expectations, Will takes a mockery of job interviews. Lombau arranges for him. Will walks in on a heated argument between Sean and Lombau after his future and it greatly upsets him. When Skylar asks Will to move to California with her, he panics and pushes her away, revealing that he is an orphan and that his foster father physically abused him.
Yeah, that's a powerful scene. I mean, that's like a tearjerker scene. You know, people like can move forward in increments. That was a big step. So,
yeah,
you know, the regression comes out there. But that scene is so powerful and how upset he is. You know, he throws her against the wall and punches the wall two or three times. He's like, don't lie to me. And like, you know, you're going to get to know me and you're not going to love me. You know, he's got that. He's been abandoned since he was a kid.
Right. Because sooner or later, someone that's been abandoned all their life, all they're going to think about is you're going to get tired of my shit and you're going to leave me just like anybody else is. So why should you even try to get close to me?
Yeah. I mean, it's a protectionist type of it. It's something he did his whole life that he never had to deal with. So.
Right. But let's talk about the job interview stuff, though, too. Like, he makes Chucky go to his own interview.
Yeah.
He goes, so, do I get paid up front or what? And these guys are literally actually paying him.
They're like, you want money now? He's like, $200 will get your prospects better or something like that.
Right. Well, get me in the door. We'll at least guarantee me in the door.
You know what's funny? I totally forgot until I was rewatching it again this week. I have kids and I always go, you suspect, like just jerk. Like when I'm like being a jerk, like just being stupid, I'll be like, what are you doing? And I'll be like, nothing. I go, you suspect. And I didn't remember where that came from. I'm watching it today and I just started laughing. I'm like, oh my God, I've been saying that for 20 something years.
You suspect. I catch myself saying some movie phrases whenever my kids act up. Everything. I said, quit being a ball bag. My wife looks at me and she goes, Quit telling the kids that they're in fallback. Like, well, sir, it's like quit being a douche. But I actually quoted some movies and stuff like that too. And I'm like, where did this came from? And then all of a sudden it just clicks with me because I'm watching a movie that comes from. I'm like, oh, okay, so that's where I got that from.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it was one of those moments. It was just funny. It just made me laugh out loud. I was like, I've been saying that for so long. I totally forgot where that came from. Just exactly like that. I'd be like, you suspect.
I like that. But, you know, the job interview thing was hilarious. And then Will walks in on the, because here's the thing. Sean wants to take a slow progress to his whole entire treatment. And here's Lambeau. Bam. Gonna hit head rush him into doing this. And I agree with Sean. You don't rush this person into it. He's just now getting him to open up. And here you are wanting, I said, his heart's in the right place, but at the same time, you need to just hold the brakes a little bit, calm your balls down, and just be like, hey, look, he'll get there, but we need to slowly do this.
You know, it's interesting. Rewatching that, even today, I was wondering what his relationship was with Lambeau. Because they do have some scenes where they're having fun. They do that like high five thing when they do like all the stuff. And I always wonder, like, obviously we were just talking, he never really had father figures. But is Lambeau like one of those guys who thinks of himself as like that kind of figure? Like, I'm pushing him like to be great, you know, and then this and then putting all the pressure, but just can't understand him. Like, Sean's the guy. He needs, like, Sean's the guy he's got to defer to because Sean understands everything that he went through and where he came from.
Right. I could see that. Like, basically, if you think about it, Sean's the mother, and then you have
kind of, yeah,
Lambeau's the father who's trying to push his son into doing this. And yeah, I could see two. Here's the thing, that's actually a good point that you bring up. It's two people who want the best for him.
Yeah, right.
And wants them to succeed, but Sean wants him to get there a little bit slower. Narrow is the way versus just going head first into the deep end without swimming in the 6 foot, you know, basically in the baby side first. You know, you got to crawl before you can walk.
Yeah. And Sean does say to him in one of the scenes prior, it's after the Ben Affleck scene somewhere. I really forget. Oh, he asked him if he had a soulmate, and he said, yeah, and he named, you know, like, I think Nietzsche and, like, a bunch of guys. He's like, that's great, Will, they're all dead. And he goes, is this about the job? And he's like, I could give a shit less about the job. It has nothing to do with you taking the job or not taking the job. Because, you know, and, that does come into play later. But, I think that's a good point. I didn't think of it that way. Like, it's almost like the maternal aspect and the father aspect. There's not a lot of scenes where you get to see exactly what the relationship with Will and Lambeau is, other than just more of that. I do think that there's a part, obviously, Lambeau, I think, cares about him in his own way, or else he wouldn't go. I know he's kind of obsessed with his mind, but I think he does care about him. Like, even at the end, I think you start to see like a side of him that cares about everything. He's like a tough father, like you're talking about.
Right.
Like, almost like an old school father where it wasn't like, you know,
To quote like Tony Soprano, in here it's 1978, out there it's 1999 or 98. So that's the kind of feel that I get, like that old school father, like you were talking about, you know?
Yeah.
But and then I definitely agree. Then we find out that he's an orphan, that he got molested by his father, which is a big, big thing in his therapy and everything. And then turns out that Skylar tells him that she loves him, but he denies loving her and then leaves. We talked about that. He next storms out of Lambeau's. Dismissing the mathematical research he has been doing. Sean points out that Will is so adept to anticipating future failure to his interpreted relationships that he may deliberately sabotage them in order to avoid emotional pain, which we talked about. When Will refuses to give an honest reply about what he wants to do with his life, Sean shows him the door. Will tells Chucky he wants to be a laborer for the rest of his life. And that's when we talked about that quote that I mentioned.
Yeah.
Then Chucky responds that it would be an insult to his friends for Will to waste his potential, that his fondest wish is that Will should leave to pursue something greater. Will decides to accept one of the job offers arranged by Lambeau. So yeah. So now we actually have him transitioning from a janitor on PO into adulthood, in a sense. Now,
yeah, I think Chucky gives him permission though. Like once he understands that, and like you know, Chucky says, "I would cash that lottery ticket in."
Right.
You know,
because anybody would kill for that opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, and that you don't owe it to yourself, you owe it to me, you know, type of deal. And I think obviously that's like the final push he kind of needs to get going in that direction. And he realizes, you know, about moving forward and at least trying at that point.
Exactly, because if it wasn't for Chucky giving him that push, I think he would have been stagnant to where he was and still going to therapy with Sean.
Yeah, I don't know, because I think I think he might have ended up in jail, because wasn't he not showing up to? I don't think he was showing up to Lambeau's classes or whatever, and that's what sessions, right. And he said, "I'm not going to be responsible for what happens to him if he doesn't show up."
Right. And
so you know, he might have ended up in prison. Who knows?
Exactly. I can see that though too. Even though he's going to therapy more than he is going to Lambeau's class, at least it's benefiting him in some way.
Yeah.
Too. Because really, let's say for instance that he doesn't go to Lambeau's class. What's he challenging himself for? He already knows everything in Lambeau's class. We've seen that. So why would he do what a TA is doing? So he's not being challenged enough with Lambeau either.
He's really not at all, because he burns the paper and Lambeau acts like, you know,
right.
He's like blowing it out and stuff. That's like one of my favorite scenes too. I just like, and he's like, this is a fucking joke. This is easy for me. I feel sorry for you. I feel sorry you can't do it.
Right.
And that's a great scene too. So, but he's obviously smarter than him. He's not really getting anything out of it. Lambeau is getting more out of that than he is, honestly.
Right.
There's no growth for him. I don't even know if intellectually he's getting growth.
So now we have Sean and Will share that they were both victims of child abuse. And Sean helps Will to accept that the abuse he suffered was not his fault. Having helped Will overcome his problems, Sean reconciles with Lambeau and decides to take this substantial travel to the world. When Will's friends rebuild Chevrolet Nova for his 21st birthday. I like how he says, "Now that's an ugly fucking car."
This is the ugliest car I've ever seen. But he's so touched about it.
Right.
It's such an honest thing. It's like, well, this is the ugliest fucking car I've ever seen.
Right. But hey, forget about it. I'm going to go ahead and do this. But he decides to pass on the job offers and drive to California to reunite with Skylar, which he mentions in a letter to Sean. "I have to see about a girl." Yeah. I like how he goes over to Sean's apartment, and then you have that scene where you have Chucky, who's also going over to Will's apartment to pick him up for the construction job.
Right.
And he's not there. So he knows he's in a good place, whether he's doing the job that Lambeau wants or doing what he wants to do and staying out of trouble.
Right. Right. That's another great sequence of events. The two of them like juxtaposed with each other. I love that ending.
I like the subtleness of it. My wife's like, "That kind of sucks about how it ended." I said, "It's kind of bleak." I said, "Not really." I said, "Think about life. Life is kind of bleak. You don't know if it's going to work out or not. You're hoping that it will, but you don't know that."
Well, and that's the dual nature in, not the dual nature, but like the difference between Sean and Lambeau, right? Is life happened to them in different ways, you know?
Right.
Life hit Sean much harder than it hit Lambeau.
Exactly. But yeah, man, this was a fun rewatch. Mm-hmm. Definitely watching it again. I'm glad that it's on Max now. If anybody's wondering where you can watch this from, you guys can watch this on Max. So now that we stripped away the nostalgia, now that we got viewing as an adult and adult lenses and us going deep with it, what do you give it?
Oh God, I got to give that. I struggle to give 9s because I think that's so high.
Me too.
But I got to give it like an 8.5. just for a few things. So I almost gave it 6.5 like you, but I remember thinking the
nostalgically
acting
or
nostalgically, I gave it a 7, but mostly because the acting's so good in that movie. I was looking at it through a couple of different lenses, but when I look back at it, especially, I mean, as an adult. So I like to say that was when I bumped into it a few years ago, and I hadn't seen it in a long time, which is weird. Like sometimes those 90s movies, I'm like scared to watch them. I'm like, oh, I don't know if they're going to live up to whatever they are. But that one like shocked me. I called it an existential time bomb because it like hit me like, oh my God, like I relate to Sean now, you know?
Right.
I'd probably give it like an 8.5 to 9. It's really looking back at it and rewatching it, it is close to a perfect movie. It's really kind of just all around, you know, it's so well written. The characters are so fleshed out, you know, even his friends who might not have that many scenes, they're all useful. There's nobody who's like not useful in that movie as far as, you know, pushing Will forward or just showing his character. I mean, right. I probably lean towards giving it like a 9. Close. Yeah, I'm going to give it because I just think it's just all around just such a well put together film, and it's a good film, and it's emotional, and you know, yeah,
I agree. Yeah. For me, I'm gonna give it probably an 8.8.
Okay,
so
I can live with that.
Yeah, I'm definitely giving it because I don't give tens for the sake of giving tens, and I don't do nines for the sake of. I have to find a balance somewhere in between. Now there might be a time when I do give like 10 out of 10s or 5 out of 5s, for example, but it has to be within reason. But this one, to me, and it deserves an 8.8 for me.
Yeah, it's so well. It's everything just works so good in that movie. Okay, I can't think of a scene I don't like in it that Same feels here. Wasted. Right? Like there's nothing wasted in that movie.
Every scene is needed.
Yeah.
For the character, it's characterization. You know.
Yeah.
And as long as you have the characterization of the character and you know what you're wanting to do with these characters and putting them in the places and the conflicts that they want to put them in, you're going to do great. And this knows its identity and knows what it wants. It knows the target audience. And this is a deep movie. Get this. This movie's 2 hours long. I don't even feel the runtime. And I'm laying in bed and I'm engaged in this whole entire thing.
Yeah,
and I'm taking notes and I just enjoy it.
I agree. I agree 1,000%. There's never a time in it where I'm saying, yeah, I agree with you. It's not like you're sitting there like, even some movies I enjoy, I'll be like, damn, it's a long movie though.
Right? Is like the stove on? Do I have to make dinner or what?
And like, maybe I should like pause it and I'll pick it up later. You know, it's like, but I don't have that feeling. It just, it flows so well seeing the scene that
way. Right. And we talked about the friendships and the conversations. It just feels natural. It just feels like everyday conversations like we would have with our own friends.
Right.
So,
yeah. And even the girlfriend thing, like you said, like I love the way they flirted in that first scene or when they're on the date. It's like just, you know, it feels real. Yeah.
Exactly. About it. Well, that's it for our therapy session. My secretary will bill you out at the door. I hope that you guys.
Insurance or no? Or?
Well, if you don't have insurance, I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. We're going to bill you. That's what we're going to do. We did an hour and 10. So we're going to bill you $300 for like an hour.
You owe it to me.
Okay.
You owe it to
I'll
me.
Just be on your podcast as a guest. How about that?
Works.
That okay. Works. But anyways, guys. Exactly. You know, I'm an easy guy. I work with anybody. But stay tuned. We'll for more stuff in the community section. I'll actually put out our schedule and everything. I know I've been kind of not putting out our schedule and everything. Everything's been kind of chaotic, but I promise you, I will have a set schedule soon. So always until next time, guys. Have a great and safe day. Thank you again, Jay. I hope that you come back again. I hope you had fun with this as well.
Anytime. It was great. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to be it. And have a great and safe night. And go see your psychiatrist and bill him. Okay. Bye, guys.